This is Thursday, July 2nd, in our Tuesday night Bible study. We're in John chapter 1, looking at the testimony of John the Baptist, beginning in John 1, verse 30. And today we're going to be talking about testimonies in general, how powerful they are, how important they are, and how you can make sure that you're primed and ready to share yours at a moment's notice. Let's get started, shall we? As I shared with you in our last session, the Apostle John, in recording his gospel, and especially dealing with John the Baptist in John chapter 1, focuses primarily on the fact that it seemed like John's ministry was a ministry of testimony and a ministry of witness. We see in the passages we're looking at today, verse number 32, when John bore witness, saying, "I saw the Spirit descending from heaven like a dove, and he remained on him, and I did not know him, but he who sent me to baptize with water said to me," now a quote from God himself, "upon whom you see the Spirit descending and remaining on him, this is he who baptizes with the Holy Spirit," again verse 34, "and I have seen and testified that this is the Son of God." That's John's testimony, that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. But John talks about his witness and testimony beginning all the way back in John chapter 1, verse 6. "There was a man sent from God whose name was John." This is John the Baptist. "This man came for a witness to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. That he was not the light, but he was sent to bear witness of that light. He came as a witness, to bear witness twice about the light being Jesus Christ." Verse 15, "John bore witness of him and cried out, saying, this was he of whom I said, he who comes after me is preferred before me, for he was before me." Verse 19, "Now this is the testimony of John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, who are you? And then back to verse number 32, "and John bore witness," verse 34, "and I have seen and testified that this is the Son of God." What is this testimony? What's involved in a testimony? What's necessary to be able to share your testimony? And why is it so powerful? Well, let me go ahead and start this whole thing off by telling you that the amazing thing about your testimony is the fact it's yours. It is your testimony. It is not something someone can argue about. It's not something that someone can say, well, that didn't happen, or I don't believe that, or you're trying to push your views on me. It's your testimony. It's something that happened to you. It's a story. It's an experience that you had. It's something that is engaging. It's not like you're asking me to believe the Bible or asking me to believe whether or not Jesus is the Son of God and raised from the dead and is coming again. You're sharing with me an experience like you had when you went on this incredible diet and lost a lot of weight. You're excited about it and you're sharing what worked for you. I can't argue with that because I see the results in you and I see the passion in you, and I don't know what happened to you. Only you do. And so your testimony of what your life was like before Christ, how you met Christ, especially that part, and what your life is now with Christ, is probably the most compelling evangelical tool that you have to be able to share your faith with others. It doesn't mean you have to quote a lot of verses. It doesn't mean that you have to get all the nuances correct. You're just sharing a story of what happened to you from your heart. Now, let me explain to you why this testimony is so important. In the book of Acts, you have the story of the Apostle Paul, who's probably the most brilliant man who lived during New Testament times. And in Acts chapter 9, he has an experience. In Acts chapter 9, he met the Lord. It says that he's still persecuting the church. He's on his way to Damascus. He's got extradition letters from the high priest who drag these Christians back to Jerusalem and force them to recant their faith in Jesus Christ. And it says in Acts 9, verse 3, as he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly, this is the account that happened to him, a light shone all around him from heaven. Then he fell to the ground, and he heard a voice saying to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And he said, Who are you, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. It is hard for you to kick against the goads. So he, Saul now, trembling and astonished, said, Lord, what do you want me to do? Arise and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do. Continuing the testimony. And the men who journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing a voice, but seeing no one. Then Saul rose from the ground, and when his eyes were open, he saw no one, but they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus, and was 3 days without sight, and neither ate nor drank. Now that's the account of what happened to Saul of Tarsus, who later became Paul. If you asked Paul how he met Christ, this is the story he would tell you. He probably would have told you that he never got out of his mind the expression of Stephen when Stephen was being stoned to death and Paul there gave affirmation to that act being done to him. When Stephen said, Behold, I see the Lord standing at the right hand of the Father, Paul probably never was able to erase that conviction. And that grew in him until all of a sudden, in the midst of his carnality, Saul of Tarsus met the Lord Jesus Christ on a road to Damascus in a rather dramatic way. Now, when I met Christ, I didn't fall off a donkey. I wasn't blind. He didn't speak to me in the same way he spoke to Saul of Tarsus. Nevertheless, it was just as profound. Just as profound. And I love sharing it because I'm able to recount that time and to almost relive that time where I first met Christ. Now, from Acts chapter 9 until Acts chapter 22, we have the account of the Apostle Paul doing many things. He changes his name. He goes on mission trips. He's persecuted by the Jews. He's left for dead in certain places. He struggles. He's forming theology. He's preaching the gospel message. And finally, he's back in Jerusalem, and all of a sudden, the mob is turning against him, and they want him killed because they believe he speaks against the temple, he speaks against Moses, and he speaks against the law. And so as this Jewish mob starts screaming, away from him, away with him, and let him die, Paul asks permission as he's being carried out by guards to address the crowd. That's the end of Acts chapter 21. Acts chapter 22, the crowd quiets down, and Paul is able to present to them the gospel. And how does he start? He starts with the one thing they can never argue about, and that is his testimony. They can argue about his interpretation of the Old Testament law. They can argue about whether they believe Jesus was a criminal or really the Messiah. They could accuse him of forsaking God and abandoning the Jewish faith. They could argue with him about many different things doctrinally and theologically. But when it came to him sharing his testimony, they sat in rapt attention, because they've never heard this before, and it's one man sharing his heart to another man. And that's exactly what Paul does. He defaults back to the one thing they can never take away from him, his testimony. Verse 6, he says, Now it happened as I journeyed and came near Damascus about noon. Suddenly a great light from heaven shone around me, and I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to me, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And so I answered, Who are you, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting. And then he goes on to share the gospel, beginning with his testimony. It is a powerful tool to be used in our lives. Paul is now imprisoned, and Paul finally gets an opportunity to present his case to Agrippa. And so the king comes, and Paul says, May I speak? And in Acts chapter 26, it says, Then Agrippa said to Paul, You're permitted to speak for yourself. So Paul stretched out his hand and answered for himself. And Paul is, of course, beginning to share why he's been charged and to defend himself against the accusations of the Jews. And what does he do? He shares his testimony. Verse 12, Acts 26. While thus occupied, as I journeyed to Damascus with authority and commission from the chief priest, at midday, O king, along the road I saw a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, shining around me and those who journeyed with me. And when we all had fallen to the ground, I heard a voice speaking to me and saying in the Hebrew language, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads. So I said, Who are you, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. And then he goes on to share more of his testimony. Now, why is this important? Because when you're facing a hostile crowd, or you're facing people who reject the core values of the gospel, they reject that maybe even God exists, and they definitely reject the reality of Jesus Christ, what you share with them is how you came to know him. You talk about your life before Christ, but you don't focus on that. That's not the highlight of your testimony. It's not how many drugs you took or how many kegs of beer that you drank or how many people you slept with. That's not the point. That glorifies the flesh. But you share what your life was like with Christ, but you focus on how you met Christ. Maybe how your mind changed, maybe how God revealed himself, maybe that point where all of a sudden it became real to you, so they're able to relate of what you were like before and move into what happened to you, and then you share what your life is like after coming to Christ. And what makes your testimony so powerful is if your life after Christ is different than your life was before Christ. It's called sanctification and holiness, and a testimony from a man whose life hasn't changed at all means nothing, nothing. We will talk more about this tomorrow as we break down the life before Christ and how you came to Christ and your life after Christ, and then we'll be talking about how not to fall into the narcissistic trap of making your testimony all about you, because it's not about you. It's about Christ. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. I hope it's been a blessing to you, and have a good evening.